The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joan Teresa Graydon, King Features Syndicate. Avoid heartburn caused by coffee. Question, I'm a coffee lover. I can attest to the benefits you have written about regarding its ability to help maintain bowel regularity. I also suffer from heartburn. Coffee makes it worse. What can you recommend? Answer, you might try a product called Preleaf, spelled P-R-E-L-E-L-I-E-F. It contains calcium glycerophosphate. According to the marketing, calcium glycerophosphate reduces the acid by up to 95% in your favorite foods and beverages. Works on the food, not on you. Dentists have been studying this compound as a way of preventing tooth decay. In one study, the investigators found that adding calcium glycerophosphate to soft drinks greatly reduced experimental tooth enamel erosion caused by these acidic beverages, cited in the Journal of Applied Oral Science, July to August 2012. Presumably, this suggests that it can also reduce the effects of acid from coffee. Question. A friend of mine was diagnosed with aggressive prostate cancer several years ago. After surgery and radiation, his PSA started going up again. His prostate cancer specialist suggested metformin and a dietary supplement called berberine. These and some other medications have helped control his PSA ever since. What can you tell me about berberine? Answer. Berberine is an alkaloid compound found in many plants that have been used in traditional medical systems. Both Chinese medicine and Ayurveda have used berberis species such as barberry, and that's cited in the journal Frontiers in Pharmacology, August 21st, 2018. Scientists have investigated berberine's ability to control blood sugar and found it comparable to metformin, cited in Metabolism, May 2008. In research on mice, berberine was able to block many biochemical pathways involved in the pathogenesis of prostate cancer, cited in OncoTarget, September 12, 2017. Test tube research suggests that it may also suppress prostate cancer metastasis, cited in International Journal of Medical Sciences, January 1, 2015. We haven't seen clinical trials of berberine to treat prostate cancer, however. Your friend is wise to be taking berberine under his specialist's supervision. This compound appears to have a lot of promise, but there is very little information on how real men with prostate cancer might respond to it. This way, the oncologist can monitor the results. Biotin has helped treat brittle nails. Question. I have found that 5,000 micrograms of biotin daily is a miracle drug for my weak, brittle fingernails. My dermatologist recommended this. Also, because of previous skin cancer, I wear sunscreen whenever I'm outside. My family doctor told me to take 2,000 international units of vitamin D3 to get my level up to the normal range. I am a healthy, active man, so I plan to continue with my current supplements. Answer. Thank you for sharing your experience with biotin, a vitamin B supplement, or a B vitamin. The Federal Office of Dietary Supplements notes that an adequate daily intake of biotin for adults is 30 micrograms. It goes on to state, quote, signs of biotin deficiency include skin rashes, hair loss, and brittle nails. Therefore, biotin supplements are often promoted for hair, skin, and nail health. However, these claims are supported at best by only a few case reports and small studies, unquote. Even though you are taking a high dose of biotin, this nutrient appears quite safe. That said, it can interfere with some lab tests. Question. If I'm not mistaken, some over-the-counter antihistamines have anticholinergic activity. Before reading that, anticholinergic drugs could be bad for the brain. I've taken these for a sleep for a few nights in a row. For several weeks afterwards, I experienced memory problems and migraines. The yard man at my condo complex has been taking these drugs for years, and he barely has any mind left. He can't remember much of anything and apparently is not aware of it because he doesn't write things down. Answer. Diphenhydramine is a sedating antihistamine that is almost always included in nighttime pain relievers. It is the PM in products like Advil PM, Aleve PM, or Tylenol PM. Diphenhydramine has anticholinergic activity. Geriatricians discourage the use of anticholinergic drugs in older patients because they contribute to impairment. Our guide to drugs in older people has a list of medications that may be inappropriate for seniors. Anyone who would like a copy, please send $3 in check or money order with a long number 10 stamped 70 cents self-addressed envelope to Graydon's People Pharmacy, number O-85, P.O. Box 52027, Durham, North Carolina, 27717-2027. It can also be downloaded for $2 from Health E-Guide section of our website, www.peoplespharmacy.com. Cancer Doctors Test Gene Editing Tool, from the Associated Press. The first attempt in the United States to use a gene editing tool called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, against cancer seems safe in the three patients who've had it so far, but it's too soon to know if it will improve survival, doctors reported recently. The doctors were able to take immune system cells from the patient's blood and alter them genetically to help them recognize and fight cancer with minimal and manageable side effects. The treatment deletes three genes that might have been hindering these cells' ability to attack the disease and adds a new fourth feature to help them do the job. It's the most complicated genetic cellular engineering that's been attempted so far, said the study leader, Dr. Edward Stadtmauer of the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. This is proof that we can safely do gene editing of these cells. After 2 to 3 months, one patient's cancer continued to worsen and another was stable. The third patient was treated too recently to know how she'll fare. The plan is to treat 15 more patients and assess safety and how well it works. It's very early, but I'm incredibly encouraged by this, said one independent expert, Dr. Aaron Gerds, a Cleveland Clinic cancer specialist. Other cell therapies for some blood cancers have been a huge hit, taking diseases that are incurable and curing them, and the gene editing may give a way to improve on those, he said. Gene editing is a way to permanently change DNA to attack the root causes of a disease. CRISPR is a tool to cut DNA at a specific spot. It's long been used in the lab and is being tried for other diseases. This study is not aimed at changing DNA within a person's body. Instead, it seeks to remove, alter, and give back to the patient's cells that are superpowered to fight their cancer in a form of immunotherapy. Chinese scientists reportedly have tried this for cancer patients, but this is the first such study outside that country. It's so novel that it took more than 2 years to get approval from U.S. government regulators to try it. The early results were released by the American Society of Hematology. Details will be given at its annual conference in December. The study is sponsored by the University of Pennsylvania, the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy in San Francisco, and a biotech company, Tmunity Therapeutics, which is spelled T-M-U-N-I-T-Y, Tmunity Therapeutics. Several study leaders and the university have a financial stake in the company and may benefit from patents and licenses on the technology. Two of the patients have multiple myeloma, a blood cancer, and the third has a sarcoma, cancer that forms in connective or soft tissue. All had failed multiple standard treatments and were out of good options. Their blood was filtered to remove immune system soldiers called T cells, which were modified in the lab and then returned to the patients through an IV. It's intended as a one-time treatment. The cells should multiply into an army within the body and act as a living drug. So far, the cells have survived and have been multiplying as intended, Stadtmauer said. This is a brand new therapy, so it's not clear how soon any anti-cancer effects will be seen. Following these patients longer and testing more of them will tell, he said. From the Harvard Health Letter, how many caffeine servings trigger migraine headaches? Last month, we told you about new medications to treat migraine headaches. Now, a small Harvard study published August 8, 2019, in the American Journal of Medicine offers a reminder about the importance of limiting migraine triggers. For 6 weeks, 100 adults with frequent migraines were asked to record daily intake of caffeinated coffee, tea, soda, and energy drinks, alcohol intake, activity levels, stress, and sleep times. They also recorded their headache episodes. Researchers looked at each study participant's risk of having a headache on a given day in relation to his or her consumption of caffeinated beverages. Having three or more servings of caffeinated drinks in a day was associated with higher odds of having a migraine on that day or the following day. However, having one to two servings of caffeinated beverages was not associated with migraines. Does that mean people prone to migraines can safely enjoy up to two caffeinated drinks per day? Not quite. The study is only observational and doesn't prove that any amount of caffeine will or won't cause migraines. But if you are prone to migraines, watch your headache triggers and perhaps keep a journal of daily activity, including caffeine intake, to help discover your trigger limits. Have you had an HIV test? About half of all people in the United States living with a diagnosis of HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, are age 50 or older. But new data from the Centers for Disease Control suggests most Americans have never been tested for the virus, which causes AIDS, the late stage phase of HIV infection. According to the June 28, 2019 Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, less than 40% of people in the United States have had an HIV test, even though the CDC recommends routine testing at least once for everyone aged 13 to 64. The CDC notes that older adults sometimes aren't tested for HIV because they don't consider themselves at risk for infection or because their health care providers don't offer them the test. Older people may also mistake late-stage HIV symptoms such as weight loss and frequent illness for signs of normal aging. Those symptoms occur because HIV attacks the body's immune system, but a delay in diagnosis allows the virus to cause more damage. That's unfortunate since medications can keep the infection from progressing. If you haven't had an HIV test, talk to your doctor about whether it's right for you, no matter your age, especially if you are sexually active or have had more than one sex partner. Make fast food a smidge healthier. Swap out sugary drinks and fatty, salty sides. Want to make fast food a little bit healthier? The key might be to make changes when you order a combination meal like a burger, fries, and a drink, Harvard researchers suggest. Their study, published in the September 2019 American Journal of Preventive Medicine, found that combo meals far exceed guidelines for healthy eating, typically providing twice the recommended amount per meal for calories and sodium. Scientists analyzed the nutritional information of a combination meal at 34 fast food and fast casual restaurants and found that the average combo meal, as advertised, had about 1,200 calories, 14 grams of saturated fat, 2,100 milligrams of salt, and 68 milligrams of sugar. Those numbers dropped dramatically when low-calorie options were substituted for high-calorie choices. For instance, removing topping or dipping sauces, ordering small fries instead of large, and replacing sugar-containing soda with a zero-calorie drink. In that case, the average combo meal had about 750 calories, 11 grams of saturated fat, 1,800 milligrams of salt, and 10 grams of sugar. A smidge healthier. Of course, a truly healthful diet involves generally avoiding fast food altogether. But if you're on the road with no alternatives, order healthier drinks and sides. Cafeteria strategies that may improve your diet. Red light, green light, we all know what those mean. And when Harvard researchers added traffic light symbols to packages and menus in a hospital cafeteria, they found that diners bought healthier foods with fewer calories. The findings were published online July 10, 2019 by JAMA Network Open. Scientists first tracked the cafeteria purchases of hospital employees for a few months. Then they labeled foods with symbols indicating if a food was healthy, that's green, less healthy, yellow, or unhealthy, red. Moved unhealthy foods to less accessible locations in the cafeteria and tracked purchases for another 2 years. About 5,700 people bought food during the time. When researchers linked calorie information to purchases, they found a 6% decrease in calories per purchase over 2 years, including a 23% decrease in calories from the last healthy foods. This builds on previous research that found sales of red stickered items dropped by 40%, and sales of green stickered items grew by 5% during the study. Can you try this at home? Maybe. Not the traffic. Light stickers. Maybe not the traffic light stickers, but making it harder to access unhealthy foods gives you enough time to think about your choice before eating something that is not consistent with your goals, says lead author Dr. Ann Thorndike, who specializes in obesity treatment and prevention at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Strategies include having a drawer for the unhealthy foods, placing unhealthy snacks high on a shelf, and having a go-to shelf for healthy snacks. Deaths from falls are up. Here's how to prevent them. Falls are among the biggest killers of older adults. And a pair of studies published June 4, 2019 in JAMA sheds light on the problem and a possible solution. The first study suggests that from 2000 to 2016, death rates among U.S. adults ages 75 or older more than doubled, from 52 to 122 per 100,000 people. This result is consistent with many earlier studies. The second study offers a potential way to help prevent falls. Researchers randomly divided 345 older adults who'd suffered a fall into two groups. The people in one group took part in a home-based program involving strength and balance exercises three times per week and a 30-minute walk twice a week. They also received some visits from a physical therapist. The people in the comparison group were asked not to exercise, and they saw their doctors only occasionally. After 1 year, the exercise group experienced 36% fewer falls than the non-exercise group. The findings support the benefits of exercising to prevent falls. Still, you should talk with your doctor or physical therapist about whether and how you might try a home-based program. Tips to cope when you're juggling several chronic health issues. Be proactive by learning about and tracking your conditions and medications and by speaking up when you have concerns. We don't want our golden years to be spent juggling a long list of health issues, but that's the reality for most older adults in the United States. The CDC reports that 75% of Americans age 65 or older have several chronic health problems, and a 2000 analysis of Medicare claims published online by Preventing Chronic Disease found that 68% of beneficiaries had two or more chronic conditions and 36% had at least four. Having multiple chronic diseases is common because people are living longer. The older we are, the more chronic diseases we accumulate, says Dr. Suzanne Salomon, Associate Chief of Gerontology at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. The challenges Advances in medicine have improved treatment for many diseases and lengthened life. But those same advances mean that today's medical care often involves seeing more types of doctors, having more tests, and getting more treatments than in earlier times. In other words, medical care in our golden years is better, but also more complicated. People take more medications, both prescription and over-the-counter, to manage these conditions. That's because there are more effective medications now than there used to be. However, medications can interfere with each other, Dr. Salomon explains. In addition, treatment for one problem may make another problem worse. For example, if you have high blood pressure and a history of falls, and lowering your blood pressure makes you feel lightheaded, well, your risk, fall risk will increase, says Dr. Aaron Stevens, a geriatrician and palliative care physician at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Doctors do their best to avoid prescribing medicines that are likely to cause problems, but the risk cannot be perfectly predicted. Bad things that are unlikely still can happen. Another problem is that people get tired of taking medications or find them too expensive, and so they don't take them. This can lead to problems of untreated hypertension, diabetes, and other conditions, Dr. Salomon explains. Taking back control. To avoid missteps, be proactive in your health care with these strategies. Number one, get educated about your conditions. Talk with your doctor about what you can do, like exercise or eat a healthy diet, to take control of any conditions you already have, and to prevent conditions you worry about getting. Next, become a medication expert. Find out what each of your medications does, why you need it, what side effects you should particularly watch for, and how it may interact with other drugs. You can get such information from your pharmacist or from online sources such as the AARP website. If you see many doctors, be sure each of them knows what medicines the other doctors prescribe. They will if they are all part of a hospital or healthcare system that shares electronic health records. To be safe, Dr. Stevens recommends bringing all of your medications to each doctor appointment, including over-the-counter pills. Then we can be sure the medication list on the computer matches the pills and doses that you're taking, Dr. Salomon says. Next, keep track of your symptoms and treatments. If you're having symptoms you think may be side effects of a medicine or an adverse interaction between drugs, use a notebook or a computer to record when you take medications, when symptoms develop, and how long the symptoms last. Get a good CEO. Just as a corporation needs a chief executive officer to oversee its many departments, you may need a primary care physician to look at the big picture and help you make sure treatment for numerous conditions is well coordinated. Consider palliative care. It's a misconception that palliative care is only for the end of life. When you have serious degenerative illness like heart failure, Parkinson's disease, or a breathing disorder, your quality of life suffers. A palliative care physician can help you manage these conditions, maximize your function, and preserve as much quality of life as possible. We want to meet people early on, not in crisis mode, Dr. Stevens says. Maybe we can prevent a fall or address pain. We can talk about what to expect, so when something happens over time, it won't be a surprise. And finally, be your own advocate. Finally, remember that no one understands how you're feeling better than you do. Ask questions about your treatment, and don't be afraid to speak up if you're having trouble managing your conditions or if you're concerned about the way your doctors are doing the job. Why do we accumulate chronic conditions? Many factors play a role in the accumulation of health problems. Most diseases involve a combination of genetics and lifestyle. Being born with certain genes can make you more vulnerable than other people to certain diseases. An unhealthy lifestyle can further increase the risk. Some genes and some lifestyle factors influence the risk for multiple diseases, and having one disease can increase your risk for another. One disease can affect an organ system, which then affects another. For example, Diabetes can damage nerves, which can lead to loss of sensation in the extremities, which can lead to imbalance, a fall, and disability. Or you may have high blood pressure that damages blood vessels, which leads to a stroke. And sometimes health conditions just go hand in hand, and we don't know why. For example, depression often accompanies heart disease, diabetes, or Parkinson's disease. Autoimmune diseases also can run in clusters. So if you have thyroid disease, you may be predisposed to another autoimmune disease like rheumatoid arthritis. Custom orthotics appear no better than store-bought versions for heel pain. When you have a type of heel pain known as plantar fasciitis, you may hear that getting a custom-made orthotic, an insole molded to your heel or your whole foot, can help ease your agony. But a study published online March 19, 2018 by the British Journal of Sports Medicine suggests that custom orthotics, which can run a few hundred dollars, are no more helpful than less expensive over-the-counter versions, which cost about $20 or less. Plantar fasciitis is an inflammation of the plantar fascia, a band of tissue that extends along the bottom of the foot from the heel to the toes. It is associated with flat feet, a lack of flexibility, and overuse. Researchers analyzed 20 randomized controlled studies, the gold standard in research, that included about 1,800 people and 8 different types of foot orthotics. Scientists found no difference in short-term pain relief among people who used custom-made orthotics compared with people who used store-bought versions. And they also found that orthotics weren't better at relieving pain or improving function compared with other treatments for heel pain, such as stretching, wearing a heel brace, or using a splint at night. Plantar fasciitis often gets better with time, as well as rest, ice, over-the-counter painkillers, and exercises to improve calf strength. Baby boomers, don't forget hepatitis C screenings. Baby boomers are falling short in getting hepatitis C screenings. In 2012, the CDC urged the entire generation of people born from 1945 to 1965 to get this simple blood test, noting that baby boomers are 5 times more likely to have the virus than other adults. But a study published online March 27, 2018 by the journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention found that only about 13% of baby boomers had been tested by 2015, up just 1% from 2013. The information came from national government health surveys. Hepatitis C can lead to cirrhosis, liver damage, liver cancer, and liver failure. Treatments are now available that can cure hepatitis C if it's caught early enough. Baby boomers are believed typically to have become infected in the 1960s through the 80s when transmission of hepatitis C was highest. People at highest risk are those who have used intravenous drugs, had more than one sex partner, or received a blood transfusion before 1992. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.